There's one very viral video that came out this past week about how menopause causes the brain to eat itself.
What?
That was a statement made by an MD, and it was a huge reaction, just like you had. That statement just is, but she said it, and then it went viral, and then there was a huge reaction to the reaction, right? There's no data. The study that she was alluding to was a rodent study, and mice die after they go through menopause. They're not like people. We don't have the same system.
Welcome to Behind the Bite, where we delve deep into the real-life struggles and triumphs surrounding food, body, and weight. I'm Dr. Christina Castagnini, a psychologist and certified eating disorder specialist, bringing you a unique blend of personal experience as a recovered individual with over 25 years of professional expertise. In each episode, we'll share the courageous journeys of individuals who have faced these challenges firsthand, alongside insights from dedicated professionals in the field. Whether you're seeking healing, inspiration, or simply a deeper understanding, this podcast is here to empower you on your own path to a better life. Join us as we explore stories of resilience, discuss the latest insights, and strive to foster a community of support and growth. Together, we can break down barriers, challenge stigma, and pave the way towards healing and living authentically.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's show. I'm really excited for today's guest. This is going to be a fantastic conversation. Look, everywhere you look, there's a new promise to fix aging. Fix, I put that in quotes. Look, a cream, there's a supplement, a workout, some miracle diet, all claiming that we can turn back time. But underneath the glossy marketing, there is a quieter message that we're told that aging means we're failing, that if we're softening means we're losing control, and that we really should be fighting our bodies every step of the way. And my guest today, Deb Benfield, she's a registered dietitian, body image coach, and author of Unapologetic Aging. She's here to challenge that lie. For 40 years, she's helped people untangle from diet culture and learn how to actually nourish themselves, not punish their bodies. When Deb hit her 60s and started researching what was being recommended to women her age, she found an entire industry built on fear. Yeah, selling restriction, things like high protein fixes, and you know what, now even GLP-1 drugs. And we've all seen them. These are all under this banner of quote unquote health. Today, we're gonna talk about how toxic diet culture has seeped into the way we age, and why undernourishment is often disguised as discipline, and how to tell the difference between genuine self-care and quiet self-harm. And most importantly, how to reclaim peace with your changing body and see this season as emergence, not decline. So if you're out there and you've ever felt like you're doing everything, quote unquote, but still being told it's not enough or feel like it's not enough, this conversation is really going to help you see aging, nourishment, and your worth in a completely new light. So I'm excited to go get Deb and bring her on. I hope you are too. Sit back, relax, and you're in for a great conversation, like I said. All right, Deb, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm really excited. Just personally, I think what we're going to talk about today is relevant to so many people I know and just myself personally. I just kind of want to jump in. But before we do that, would you mind if I ask a little bit about like your background and how you got started in your career?
Sure. Yeah. I took a windy path to become a dietitian. I've been a dietitian for 40 years. And I am very fortunate in that when I started working, I started referring clients to a therapist who invited me to join her practice, and she specialized in eating disorder treatment. So I got to jump into that way early in my career in the late 80s. So I think a lot of dietitians have to find their way out of all the weight management work that we're all trained to do. And I just feel like I was spared. So ever since then, this is my specialty, is trying to prevent and treat disordered eating and eating disorders. And then when I turned 60, I'll be 67 in a couple of weeks. And I just really got curious about what was being recommended for how we can take care of ourselves at this chapter. And I was deeply disappointed in what I found. I should have known, but just so incredibly weight-centric and tainted by diet culture. So out of my frustration, I just developed my own options for folks, programming, online groups, and things like that. And through all of that, decided to write a book, which will be out December 16th, which is called Unapologetic Aging. So, yeah, that's what I'm about right now.
So I'm curious, when you said that, like, you went and you were disappointed with what you found. And so for people listening, there's so much noise out there and social media. What did you find that disappointed you? Just so people can go, oh, I thought that was the way things are. Or that's the accurate information.
As a dietitian and as a dietitian who specializes in eating disorders, I should have known that all of the anti-fat bias would make its way. But it was just, I found very few resources that I could recommend to my clients that did not include all of the focus on managing weight. And in the time since I started doing this work in the last 7 years, and certainly in the last 2 years since I've been writing my book and getting that out there, it's gotten so much worse. So much worse, with the menopause gold rush being so intense, and now with GLP-1s being marketed specifically at midlife women, it's way worse than when I first started. So I'm glad I got started on this when I did. Yeah, at least there's a little something out there, and I think there will be more. There will be more coming.
So, you know, I find some eating disorder specialist too. Obviously, I'm not doing the nutrition and I'm a dietitian, but I find it so hard for people to take what I say as it's so counter to what's out there. And so people look at me like I have 10 heads and they're like, oh, come on, that's not true. That's not possible. And I'm wondering if you find that too. And how do you manage that or deal with that when people just look at you like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, it's tough because I'm just going to start with belly fat because that is, feels like the loudest. I don't actually, that's changed now. There's so much fear mongering now around high protein diets and lifting heavy. It's just so intense. But just for example, as a dietitian, I feel strongly that our bodies are designed, are literally wired to protect us and help us survive. That's the ultimate truth. And yes, it is tricky in our culture when, you know, there's so much stress and anxiety, so little access to good food sometimes. There's the social determinants of health to consider. It's so complex. And I feel like we are hearing a lot of what diet culture tends to push is so black and white and all or nothing that it's difficult for people to be curious about, can you find your sweet spot and listen to your body and allow yourself carbohydrates and pleasure while also like considering what supports you, in feeling like you have energy and like you have a clear mind. There are signs that your eating is on track with what your body needs without getting in the numbers and the obsession and checking the scales. So I feel like we need to broaden and expand the conversation a bit.
You brought up a couple things like thinking clearly. If you had an ideal like questionnaire to ask people instead of them coming in and getting their weight and their BMI and all of that, I'm just asking you off the cuff here, but What would you ask people instead to get more of a sense of if they're at their sweet spot?
The way that I begin that conversation is to ask if a person feels like they are eating in such a way that they feel like they have enough energy every day. Because in my mind, and my perspective is that the biggest concern nutritionally is undernourishing yourself. Obviously, I have a bias because I see an awful lot of folks that are trying to recover from an eating disorder, and restriction is like one of the hardest things to fight. But I feel like the undernourishment brings lack of energy, like to the point of fatigue, a foggy mind, like not being able to access clear thought, sometimes memory issues. And that can be confused also and contaminated by obsessive thought, right? When you get yourself too hungry, your mind will be preoccupied by what you can't eat and what you just ate and what you want to eat, all your cravings. Mm-hmm. And certainly emotions as well. If you are undernourished, you'll have more mood swings, more irritability. The word hangry exists for a reason. It's very real. And for people who are familiar with the Minnesota Starvation Study, we have information that shows when a human body is undernourished, the brain is the organ that's affected most. And it just so happens to be that those symptoms are very similar to the symptoms that women report in perimenopause and in menopause. So I think it's a really important work to get curious about, are you eating enough? Because there's so much fear around losing control of your body in midlife that many women get more restrictive or more aggressive in their movement and end up causing more harm.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So a few things you brought up. Obviously, that study is very monumental. But for people that don't know about it, maybe we could talk about that.
Okay.
Because it's shocking. I'm always shocked that it's not more just talked about, because what is talked about out in the media is what I eat in a day or do this diet. And it's far less calorically than what they determined as so inhumane. You may not repeat this study.
Exactly.
Let's talk about this. I don't normally talk numbers or calories, but I think it's shocking enough to maybe talk about here.
Yeah, I think it's an important, I find myself educating folks about this. I think it is important, and I'll make it very brief because it is like boring science. But for those who don't know, this was research done in the 40s, and we don't have any other data that comes anywhere close to this, because the subjects were human beings that were starved or semi-starved, and it's inhumane to do that, unethical, so we don't have any other data to pull from. But we have volumes, because this was a 9-month study that was very well designed. For 3 months, these were college-aged men that volunteered to be underfed or starved so that we would know at the end of World War II how to refeed people who had been through their own starvation. And we did not know how to do that safely. So this was pretty important research. And they were housed and controlled and could eat whatever they wanted for the first 3 months. And they were just fed just like a cafeteria, but studied psychologically and physiologically. And then for 3 months, they were fed half of their previous intake and lost a third of their body weight. Same battery of tests. And it sounds like you want to talk about the calories that they ate. I think that does surprise people that they were fed 1,500 calories. And in diet culture world, that doesn't sound that low. Diet culture has set us up to hear 1,500 is not that low. But for these college-aged men, it was half of what they were accustomed to. And then for the last 3 months, they could refeed themselves again without any constraints. Same battery of tests. And what they found was mostly psychological. Increase in anxiety, increase in problems with stress, decrease in interest in things they were previously interested in, including sex, could not regulate their body temperature. They had to be in the sun or in a warm shower to be able to feel warm. They were very fatigued. They were obsessed. These were college-aged men in the 40s, and they were cutting out photographs of food and recipes. Very unusual behavior. And of course, the same kind of thing with their actual food, like spending more time eating food, moving the food around on their plates, tearing the bread apart, just being with their food for longer, and like just obsessively thinking about that. They also had mood swings. There were some reported psychotic breaks. There was depression, irritability, and difficulty comprehending what they were reading. They couldn't focus. They had to reread to be able to comprehend. So focus was very much affected. I think that's it. I may be forgetting something. But the striking thing is that all of that went away when they could eat again. It was all about being undernourished. And I think women who are going through midlife do some of that to themselves. And the symptom list is very much exactly like what women report, except for the hot flashes. Many of the same exact symptoms.
No, thank you for going over that. And it's interesting you say like women are doing it to themselves, but I wonder, are they or are they just following what they're reading and think is normal or that their doctors are telling them to do?
Sure, exactly. It's very frightening to me, and I get very angry about the fact that this is women. I feel like we're all just trying to be good. We're all just trying to do what we think is right. And you especially know that there is this place where what you're doing doesn't align with what your body needs. And then that's how disordered eating and eating disorders begin, is that when you think you should do a certain thing for whatever the reason is, but your body needs something different, that is where that off-ramp to an eating disorder begins. Yeah, for most people.
And I think it's confusing for a lot of people, too. They don't realize that they're undernourished, not eating enough. And at least I hear people saying, I have menopause brain, or I'm irritable, I have mood swings because I'm in menopause. Mm-hmm. They're attributing it to that. And maybe we could talk about that a little bit, because I at least grew up thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to dread when I go through menopause because I'm going to I'm going to be so emotional and it's going to be this horrible time that I'm going to dread. And it just sounded awful.
Sure.
And I do still hear that. Normal. So how do you know if I'm undernourished or if this is a normal part of menopause that I think most people thought, oh gosh, this is going to be this time of my life.
Yeah. How can you know unless you nourish yourself? You're going to have to do your own experiments. I have many clients that when they start to nourish themselves with more generosity, they can sense that they're more emotionally stable. Their sleep improves. Many symptoms, like GI symptoms, sometimes improve. And maybe, if they're depending on their age, menstrual cycle can improve. So it's pretty striking. It depends on your age. But I want to just validate what you said about the fear-mongering around midlife. I think it's out of control. It's completely out of control. We're all very different in what we experience. We're all very unique. And some women have an easy go of it, and some women have a very hard time. But the fear that contributes to this is just not helpful. We all know that the fear just increases the anxiety, and the bracing increases discomfort and maybe problems with sleep, one of the biggest issues. So hot flashes are the one thing that, I don't think nutrition affects that, except for sometimes not eating and eating at particular times can influence it some, but that data is pretty weak.
So, there's this whole thing with eating disorders anyway, about control, right? So sure. There comes a time where
sure.
you can feel out of control with your body. It's changing, it's shifting.
Absolutely.
It can be very scary. And so yes. the one thing people yes. can want to true is, especially if they're reading all this stuff on the internet, control your body, and you know, you're not doing something right if you're not getting rid yeah. of your metabolic. I can give you this product, this diet, this program, whatever right. to fight it. And so it's almost, because I'm in the middle of menopause now too, I'll just share this with everybody. I get all the yes. ads because it's my algorithm. I see yes. all this stuff and I'm like, it really instills this sense of you're not doing something right if you're not mm. taking control and maintaining the body mm-hmm. you had before, or if your body's doing what it's naturally supposed to do, you know, you're right. failing. It's horrible.
Yes, it is horrible. And the reason I wrote the book is because I saw so many women in relapse and so many women that were headed toward disordered eating. And the scariest thing of all is that it's so normalized. It's so normalized. The disordered behaviors are normalized across the board in our culture, but especially in midlife women. And of course, healthcare providers don't catch it and don't screen or ask questions. And then you have on top of that, and I don't know how much you want to talk about this, the GLP-1s that are being really targeted to exactly midlife women. So it gets very complex really fast. And I don't blame anybody who decides that they want to make that choice. I understand that you feel like you are losing relevance when you are going through these changes. It is frightening for a lot of people. Your life itself may be changing. Things are changing in your home with children perhaps leaving. Relationships get shaky. Jobs get shaky. It is a very, I think, a time that is likely full of transitions in general. And then your body, add your body to the list of things that are changing. So grabbing on to getting more aggressive about your physical activity and getting more restrictive with your how you nourish yourself makes sense. I think we just need to keep talking about it as please be aware of this choice you're making. And is it really supporting you? And can you imagine accepting the changes that come at this time in life? One of the big pieces of my book is about starting to recognize ageism and your internalized ageism and the stories that you carry about aging. And I personally think a lot of the menopause noise is underneath it all, ageism and like anti-fat bias. I think if we could get clear on that, it would be very helpful. I think once you recognize, oh, this is a social narrative that I've inherited, that it is bad for me to look older, that aging means decline, that aging is all bad. And all the stories that we tell ourselves about aging, not to mention all the stories we have about our bodies changing and getting softer and having more of a belly. If you can get clear that the reason you're so terrified of those things is because you have believed the social narratives, and maybe that can help start to go, maybe I can be okay. And maybe I can accept myself. Maybe I can even understand that this is a time of emergence in my life. If I can accept my body, what are my true values? How do I want to spend my time and energy? Because this is one of the things about midlife is you get very clear that time is finite and so is energy. So how do you want to spend yours? That famous Mary Oliver poem that ends with like, how do you want to spend your wild and precious life really applies in midlife. You get very clear. It's like, okay, I need to decide. Do I want to spend my time on this? And no judgment if that's how people want to spend their time. But everybody needs to, I think, make their own decisions and be informed when you make those decisions instead of having all this regret. Because there's a lot of grief anyway. There's grief for changing your body and grief for your children leaving, if you choose to have children, grief or changes in relationships and jobs, and all, there are all sorts of losses, and maybe not, but potentially, taking care of yourself through these tricky places instead of being harder on yourself is what I encourage. Can you take care of yourself? Can you be generous instead of so stingy with yourself at this time?
That's well said, because I think there is so much expectation, harshness, whatever you want to put it, and I think just like very vicarious shaming that gets put on people too. I don't know, but it's just so hard to look at everything where it's like, oh my gosh, she really let herself go, or vice versa. Like you see somebody's like, she looks amazing, she looks 20 years younger. It's putting these people that are don't have wrinkles or not, seem to be like have the fountain of youth, like praised, like this is the ideal. So again, to your point, like if you're defying aging, you're upheld as, wow, what are you doing? And then if you're naturally aging, you're not doing something right. Do something, right? Like you're shamed.
For and sure.
There's all this pressure for people, I think, for people to do something to counteract that. And I know a lot of people are putting lots and lots of money into changing their appearance, even, right? If they're not trying to lose weight, or there's even with the GLP-1s, right? They're talking about, what do you do with the side effects? Okay, now you've got this, but now there's Ozempic face or dragging skin or whatever it is.
Yes.
Oh, but there's a solution for that too. It's almost like you start one thing and then there's another thing and another thing. Yes. It's like you're never going to reach this level of whatever you're trying to attain.
Yeah, you could spend a lot of your resources in trying to stop time. It just, if you zoom out and look at this, it can be, you could laugh at it. You could have some levity and go, this is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. There for me, when I just was like a little bit pissed off, because leave me alone. This is the time that I get to wear caftans and have fun. Leave me alone. So I just, of course, I'm pushing against it. Mm-hmm. I understand that some people, it's not that easy, because it is scary. There is fear. Yeah. And I just think the biggest fear is losing relevance, feeling like there's a grasping around relevance, because our culture has set it up that way, that being young and being thin is, that's the default body in the hierarchy. And if you don't have those attributes, if you are marginalized from whatever your identity is, getting older just pushes you further to the margins. So grasping at things that make you appear to pass as younger or pass as thinner, it's very attractive, very sparkly. I get that.
No, it makes sense, because I've often heard people say, oh gosh, I never felt invisible before. No, it's shocking. Mm-hmm. I feel invisible, or it's hard to go out.
Yeah.
But yeah, to your point, lots of changes.
Yeah.
And it's hard enough, I think, with younger people I work with, to have them not so focused on getting acceptance or external validation for the external. And I know you don't work with this too much because you're working more with the nutrition and whatnot, but do you find that people are really struggling to look at more like inward about what is good about them and what matters more so than what's going on externally for them?
My belief, my experience so far is that, and I've been doing this for 40 years, the people that have lives that have allowed them, or value systems that have allowed them to be identified with other attributes other than appearance, I think have a little easier time with aging than those that are really feeling like their identity is wrapped up in appearance, especially body. I think what you're describing is very true. And again, it depends on the person, but my encouragement is to look at what's really going on underneath. And it really, my experience is, it really helps for people to understand that there's just so much pressure and body surveillance that, like, freeing yourself from that, like not being such a mark for all the marketing, like, it's empowering. It can feel very powerful to push back on that and find another way. Yeah. Not that easy, though. I know that it's not easy.
No, I'm curious, does your book touch at all on men, or is it geared mostly toward women?
I tried very hard. I told my publisher that I really wanted to make this for everybody because in my practice, I see more men than ever, and gender nonconforming folks, of course, especially. Mm-hmm. So I tried very hard to make it for everybody. Okay. But we know that sexism meets ageism and that women have a harder time with aging the way it is right now. Yeah, but it is very true that everybody struggles.
Yeah, and just to your point, like men don't have that, oh, men oh belly, whatever going on. So there's not that out there for them. What are you finding with men that come into your practice as they're aging?
It's the same, and except for what you just said. There's not the complication of this abrupt menopausal change. But there is a softening of muscle mass that everybody experiences, no matter what. And some men find that very hard because, again, they've identified with a hard body. And, of course, there's some capacity to keep muscle mass. I'm not saying it all goes away. But there is, that is one of the biggest changes in a man's body, is that muscle mass decreases as we age, regardless of your diet and your efforts. And people cannot believe that, but that's the truth. The data is very clear. Mm-hmm. That is the process of aging. Nobody wants to say this, but aging is like what happens before we die. So if we can embrace the fact that we're all going to die, I know we know that, but we don't want to acknowledge it. This is a very, in my opinion, important phase and chapter. As you become an elder, you start to let go of some of the things that I think are limiting you, for all of us, men, women, gender nonconforming, everybody. And you can become very much at peace with the end of your life. I did a lot of reading around acceptance of death when I was writing the book, because it just feels like it's part of it.
And that's scary for a lot of people, like to your point. I think that's a lot of the driving force of this, actually, the anti-aging movement. It's like there's a lot of this biohacking and a lot of products, a lot of supplements, a lot of and that. What is that man that's paying $20 million a year? What not to figure out how to age backwards.
Exactly. And then you get into privilege and like accessibility, and it's fascinating, actually. I personally don't have an interest in living to these very old ages because it's just not always pretty, folks. It's not always easy. If you feel great and your brain is amazing, sure, but that's not usually your experience. There are usually things that are hard. Plus, you're losing your friends and family. So I'm not so sure that's that smart. Again, to each their own.
Yeah, I'm glad you're mentioning that because I think there is this idea to some people have of if I'm aging in a way where my body hurts or the normal things are happening with aging, it's my fault. Yeah. I'm not eating. I'm not exercising. I'm doing something wrong. I'm not taking the right supplements. And I'm wondering if you find that too. Like people come to you saying, give me some kind of like magical diet or way to eat.
Oh, for sure. As a dietitian who works in this field, people want to be fixed, right? People want a very quick and easy solution. And we know how hard this work is. This is so multifactorial and requires a team. So I am hugely skeptical of all of the biohacking and supplements. And I need to see the data. And I haven't seen data that really supports some of the things I'm hearing people say. As a matter of fact, it's a big conversation right now, especially in the menopause space. By the time this comes out, who knows what will be happening? But in this past week, there's been a big conversation about menopause influencers who say like very strong statements that are not supported in data and like based on rodent studies and just very, in my opinion, just lots and lots of fear-mongering to sell supplements, to sell weighted vests and all sorts of things to get you through.
I'm curious because maybe somebody is buying into those influential messages. So what are they, so people can maybe go, oh, wait, there's no backing to those things. Yeah. And I bought the Kool-Aid. What are those messages?
The Menopause Society met, I think, I don't know if it was last week or the week before. And so we have some good solid data now. And anything that is being said about how hormone replacement treatment prevents like cardiovascular disease, brain changes, those statements are not well supported in data. That's fear-mongering to a great extent. And I'm not going to throw around any names, but there are people who are saying very unfounded statements. For example, there's one very viral video that came out this past week about how menopause causes the brain to eat itself.
What?
That was a statement made by an MD, and there was a huge reaction, just like you had. That statement just is, but she said it, and then it went viral, and then there was a huge reaction to the reaction, right? There is no data. The study that she was alluding to was a rodent study, and mice die after they go through menopause. They're not like people. That we don't have the same system. There's no comparison to be made. So that was just a very, in my opinion, unethical and irresponsible to make people that afraid. Your face is people. I don't know if people can see your face, but your face is exactly. I was like, you're kidding me.
Yeah. But shocking.
Yes. So that's an example of, and then there were others that are not quite as attention grabbing, right? This is clickbait. This is how it works. The fear and angst is what gets people to watch the videos. That's the problem with getting information from social media, is that you need to be very careful as a consumer. And it's really hard. It's really hard for all of us to support our clients and to educate when there's so much mythology out there that's really based on getting people's attention. This is an attention seeking, just the whole, all of social media is about getting your attention. So anything that gets your attention around something that's scary may lead you to be vulnerable to buy the supplements or to start the hormone replacement treatment. And I don't even get into that. I say, talk to your healthcare provider about what you need. That's a personal decision. But not everybody can do that. It's not everybody tolerates hormone replacement. So it's really too bad, because people are very frightened when they hear that. And that they might have a stroke if they don't take hormone replacement. Yeah, it's too bad. But it's the Wild West out there. People can say whatever they want. There's no regulation. Yeah. Just like people can sell supplements and there's no regulation over that either.
Oh, yeah. That's rampant.
Yeah.
This one's going to cure this. This one's going to do this. This is the miracle.
Exactly. Yeah. So I just encourage people to get skeptical and not fall for it, and like really get curious and look at where the data goes, and maybe find some good reputable practitioners that you can trust. Yeah, it's not easy out there. I have a lot of compassion for people who are actually being exposed to social media messages.
Okay, so let's turn it around to you. So people come in to see you, and this is like your life work.
Yes.
So how do you go about, like, let's say somebody's just so confused, they've been like bombarded with social media messages, and they're so just like, I've been taking all these supplements, I've been doing all these things, now I don't know what to eat, what to take, what to do. How do you start sifting through all the noise and helping like this individual person who's in your office do something that works for them and get like all that noise out of their head?
Yeah, many people start with exactly what you just said. I feel lost. I feel like I don't know how to eat anymore. Mm-hmm. I've been on this diet and that diet and all over the place, and I really literally don't know how to eat anymore. People say that to me all the time. Starting with timing, I'm a big fan of trying to eat throughout the day, and also a big fan of flexibility, so not too rigid with it, but trying to nourish yourself with a flexible balance, like some protein, carb, and fat. I also think it's really important to have pleasure. I think it's important for your mental health to enjoy your food. And I think intuitive eating has a place in this too. The hub of intuitive eating is satisfaction. So foods that satisfy you so that you don't start to have cravings an hour after you eat. So I encourage eating like every 4 or 5 hours. And I go through supplements to see if there's really a need for supplements. Of course, sometimes there is, sometimes there's not. Moving your body in ways that you don't feel, again, like you are fighting your body or that you're driving yourself. See if you can find some connection to your body so that you feel like you're playing instead of a have to find a want to in your movement. And also a big fan of trying to connect with yourself and see if you can notice when you're hungry, notice when you're satisfied. Not everybody can do that. Eating disorders and trauma and chronic dieting make that difficult. So if that's accessible, work really hard on reconnecting with that, with lots and lots of compassion so that people can start to drop their shame. Because that's, I think that's when I hear somebody say, I don't feel like I'm beating myself as much up. I feel like I'm not beating myself up as much anymore. I know I'm getting somewhere. It really helps to just to be curious and compassionate with yourself as you go through this process. I hope that helps. I hope that makes sense. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Because I think there is a lot of confusion, even if somebody has not had disorder eating or chronic dieting in the past. It's
true. True.
You read things and I know people that are just like, oh, you know, I believe in this way of eating and this way. It's just like they become disciples of whatever they've read and it's
right.
Like, why? And I get it. It's loud out there, but.
I mean, sometimes people, it becomes their identity. If you look at an Instagram bio, like vegan or intermittent fasting or like some diet is part of the identity of the person, that's how far it's gone. Yeah.
Yeah. And even speaking to intermittent fasting, I've had some debates with people. It makes you live longer. It is the scientifically proven the way to eat. Yeah. And this, I don't even engage in the debate. It's just the belief system that gets gospel.
True.
So,
It's another loud one. Sometimes I try to have some levity and find some humor in this because if you eat and finish eating by 8 o'clock and you sleep and then you wake up and it's 9 o'clock before you get to breakfast, isn't that the same thing? Just like the way we naturally live is pretty much in tune with intermittent fasting. I just have to laugh sometimes.
I'm with you. I would say, isn't it called breakfast?
Exactly.
That's what it's called.
Yeah, the way we actually live kind of means that our body rests for a while between dinner and breakfast. Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah. And it's also true that you can't really sleep if you're hungry. So sometimes a bedtime snack is a great idea because you can't sleep. And not sleeping is a whole nother conversation.
Yeah. No, that's a true thing.
Yeah, it's very real. Yeah. So everybody, again, is very unique. One of my biggest issues with our culture is blanket statements about the best diet when we're all so incredibly unique. Our genetics are from all over the place and we have very different needs. These generalized diet recommendations do not make sense to me. Doesn't calculate.
No. Like you and I could eat the same things and do the same movement for a whole year and our bodies are going to function differently, feel differently, our weights are going to be different after this. It's just That's why I always say diets don't work, because if they did, we would both have the same exact outcome and feel the exact same way after a year. It's just not going to ever happen.
One of my favorite visuals to look at is, I'm sure you've seen some of the, like, the bodies of all the Olympic athletes and how big a range there are, and like height and composition and weight. It's just fascinating. It's like Chihuahuas and Great Danes, right? It's just genetics are vast. Yeah, therefore bodies are different. And how you nourish those bodies also different. Yeah.
Good point. I love it.
And the older we get, the more unique we become. We have more experiences, more disease diagnosis, more medications, and our bodies become even more different.
And thank goodness we're all different.
I know. That's the exciting part.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah.
Okay. So book's coming out in December 16th?
Correct.
December 16th. So where can people get it? Because I'm a big fan right now. I want to go get it, but where can other people get it?
Hopefully wherever books are sold. But if you wanted to go to my website, is my name, Deborah Benfield, and the name of the book is Unapologetic Aging, How to Mend and Nourish Your Relationship with Your Body. And I'm on Substack, same, Unapologetic Aging, my name. I'm on Instagram, Aging Body Liberation. So those are the hot spots for where you can find me and the book. Yeah.
And if people want to work with you, they can also find you there.
Same. Yes, exactly. Yeah. I do groups, membership, one-on-one. Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay. Any last final words before we end?
Just that actually, in my opinion, aging can be a time of emergence. I just wish that people weren't so frightened about it, because it can be very liberating, especially when you're not afraid of what's happening with your appearance. If you can let that go and be with that a little bit more, I think you could enjoy this chapter of your life.
Thank you so much. This has been a fantastic conversation. Really appreciate being here.
Thank you for having me. Love to talk about this.
Thank you so much for listening today. Behind the Bite podcast is created by me, Dr. Christina Castanini, as part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network and produced by the Tweaky Tales. I love hearing from my listeners. So if you like the show, please rate and subscribe to it on whatever platform you're on. And for anyone who wants to understand their relationship with food better, or who might be wondering if they have an eating disorder, I have a free 9-week e-course at my website. Just go to www.behindthebitepodcast.com to get your free e-course today. Please note, this podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, clinical, or other professional information. If you want or need a professional, you should find one to work with who can address your individual needs and situation.